Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I hope you are.
Yeah, basically okay. Somehow I fell off my bike the other day.
God, well, you're just going to have to stay home in an easy chair.
It's ridiculous.
It's not funny for me.
So my area of my back where the rib injury was is re-aching, so... Anyways... So, this could be fairly brief. We had a couple things I wondered about.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know if you had anything you wanted to...
Well, no, I just wanted to go over a couple things in general, but...
Well, go ahead.
Was thinking a little bit further about, am I going to get on to Ray McDonald? He just hasn't responded.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but I'm sure he's, whatever, I'll be able to do most of it. We just haven't. Dom, is failing, and he will be of no help anymore, unfortunately. Because he just has given up. Body to follow residential stuff, and that's unusual. That's part of the argument. And then the other thing is, I guess that the AIW stuff in Pittsburgh is due to go to Penn State by the middle of the year. I don't see any opportunity
Can you speak up a little louder, Ken?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me. I said that I was talking about the stuff in Pittsburgh.
Right.
The AIW stuff. And that, according to what we've heard, they're going to move that on to Penn State shortly.
Did you ever get back and talk to John Lepley about the date that they plan to move things?
Well, they were planning to move it by May or June.
Okay.
Now, whether that has been, I haven't talked to him recently, so that may be changed. All I was saying is I don't see with the work I've got ahead with our labor history stuff, which is our busy time, plus what I'm doing with my other job, which is all of a sudden got busy. I don't see any chance to do anything before June on the AIW project.
Okay.
I'm going to just presume that material will always be available to us, whether it's in Pittsburgh or over in the middle part of the state.
Do you want to contact Lepley one more time about that, or do you want me to?
Well, if you got time, go ahead and do it, and then I'll, in the interim, I'll bug Ray, and we'll see what we can come up with. Perhaps I did some more stuff prior to our call. I think we got it scheduled for next week, on the 17th, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't want to play around the voice library and make them keep changing, but on the other hand, if it would be better to wait another week, if Ray says, well, I can't talk to you now, but I can talk to you next Tuesday, we can easily delay our talking another week or two. So just let me know so I let them know.
Sure. Has that been scheduled for the 17th? I can't remember.
I believe I had given a couple dates to them, and they said, let's do the 17th at 10:30 our time, 9:30 your time.
Yeah.
So, it's not a big deal changing, but the earlier I tell them, the better. But I'll split the two. In terms of Lepley, the question is when and how to go see it, and... I will email him because I would care if there'd be more access in Pittsburgh than there would be at State College, that might matter. Or if it's different access, that would be useful.
But, and you know, one of the things is that...
And how it's been cataloged would be good to know, because we don't have any idea about that.
Yeah, now there's a good chance one of the best things that we'll have will be the newspapers through the years of the, of the old UAW auto worker.
Mm-hmm.
It was the FLCIO pop, I mean the FLL pop publication. Those are really quite detailed on, you know, because they were also very partisan on the whole dispute with the CIO. And so that would be a nice resource. I think those are, in fact, I can check that easy enough. They may all be on file right here in the Milwaukee Public Library.
Well, that would be useful to know. I think, what's the gentleman's name from MEA who I spent some time with you guys one day, who's active in your Wisconsin labor history? The
He's from who?
I don't care. His name is Steve.
Oh, Steve Capiri.
Thank you. I don't remember
Steve
what.
Steve he came out of the Kalamazoo loop.
Oh, he was AIW, okay.
Yeah, and then he, in other words, he's 20 years younger than I am.
Got you.
And so he's just turning 65 now.
Well, Steve, when you and I and he met, and I think somehow that tape recording got lost, I recall one of the important things he mentioned was he thought all the papers, and I don't know if it means the UAW-AFL or just the AIW, were at Cornell in Ithaca.
Oh, he did say that. Okay, yeah,
and,
I forgot that.
And do you see him at all?
Oh, I see him all the time. He's the president of our society.
Okay. Will you just ask him if he meant, if he thought, I mean, I can look it up, but I was just curious, did he mean all of the UAW-AFL or just the AIW at Cornell? And then I should check online. It could be that it's been digitized. I don't know.
Yeah,
What you were just saying would be even less of an issue.
Right, exactly. So, anyway, but that would be one of the primary sources. I don't know what else is in those old files.
Well, that's part of my question, and I should ask... I'll try to ask Lepley, can I see anything online? Can we see anything online? Because there may already be. I don't know. It's just a matter of what they're doing. Are they cataloging or any what? So that's one of my assignments.
And the other one is I'll check with the Wisconsin Historical Society because they've got quite a labor, archives here too, and so. I'm going to put that down, Ray M, and then I'm going to check with Historical Society, because I know those guys out there, of course. So, all right.
So, the two things. One is about Ray. The big issue about Ray was we were talking about after the merger, AIW was among those unions that seemed fairly active or very active in coordinated bargaining that was done under the auspices of the AFL-CIO's IUD, International Union Department.
Yeah. And that is correct. Ray was one of the leaders at that time. Now that's getting into the 70s.
But that's fine. I mean, in fact, that a lot of labor historians are now working on much more recent things. So,
yeah, and I do. My perspective is that's modern times.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. But grad students now are doing papers on that time period when labor was a lot stronger. So, the coordinated bargaining. There are probably some papers, and I'm planning to go. The old IRRA is now LERA.
That's right.
And their annual conference is in Minneapolis this May, the last week in May.
Oh, really?
And I'm going, and I'm giving a paper related to the MSU faculty grievance process.
I see.
So, like you, I've got some other fires that I've committed to.
Yeah.
And I will try to make sure when I go to see if there's anybody else, any of the old union people who were involved in coordinated bargaining stuff still around, who maybe weren't AIW per se, but know about the negotiations of certain ones. So if you talk to Ray, that would be useful for us to chat. And make sure I know that.
And I don't know if you know Dick Prostin. Do you know the Prostin brothers?
I know the name, I don't know the person.
Okay, yeah, Dick was handling that for the IUD, and he's down in Florida, retired now, but he's a good friend of ours, and very close to Ray. So
okay.
Another source.
Well, I can.
Yeah.
One of the nice things is being able to do these interviews on phone, and
yeah.
So people don't have to be around.
Right. That's why I'm saying is that, you know, and the other thing that we were very good at, the AIW, was, internal education. You know, we were very strong when the union, when we had the Reform Convention in 57, one of the first things that Carl Grebenkroc did when he became president was to hire Dick Humphreys out of the School for Workers.
Yeah, I remember him.
And Dick was our education director. Now, Dick went on, of course, to West Virginia, but anyway, Dick was, you know, very, very, Carl was very dedicated to, you know, Stewart's education, and we set up collective bargaining conferences, and really made an effort to do internal education of our members on union administration, bargaining contracts, community services, internal communications. I mean, I taught a series of how to put out a local union newsletter. Really some groundbreaking stuff. And others were doing it. I don't mean to say we
no.
were founders of it, but the concentration was, you know, really strong. I always felt, in fact, that's what we should talk about a little bit. I always felt that when it came to educating, you know, making an effort to provide our members with knowledge so they could, you know, maybe question some of our reps. We got a lot of, you know, feedback from some of our older reps who were, you know, because they were upset with us giving these guys ideas. You know, they would rather have kept them barefoot and pregnant, if you know what I mean. And that was, for instance, in Region 7, we always had good support in Region 7 over there in Western Michigan. Region 3, very little support. He wanted to run the show his own way. A lot of bullshit, and so we never got in there very, very,
You didn't get in where very good?
Which was Region 3, which was okay. Ohio and so forth.
Okay.
And that's a long story, which gets into the internal politics of the fact that I got fired in 1982.
I forgot. When were you fired? After Dom was done?
Yeah, I lasted about 6 months with this, the new guy. So.
Whose name was?
Was Nick Seraglio.
Okay, Seraglio, who appeared before as Dom's secretary treasurer.
He did come in as secretary treasurer.
Yeah. I was going through some documents, so.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. You asshole.
On the. I'm going to go in a little bit of order here. One of the other loose ends, and I can't remember, it might be that I was going to do it. I can't recall who was going to do it. There was this grad student, or new professor, but I think grad student at the time, who did a paper on the UAW, AFL, and or AIW in terms of corruption in the 50s. Well, that's what I was trying to recall. Did you tell me at one time you did have some interactions and some email
Yes. This is the guy from Louisiana.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of his name. Yeah. I don't remember. I would have to go back and He and I went to the conference in New York.
Right.
The larger conference in New York. He was there, and we met briefly, and we talked a little bit about it. He was very interested in, you know, I think he's gone off and done some other research. No, he was a full professor wherever, and I'll try to see if I think of. So I'm going to, yeah, he was a guy we need to get to.
Did we ever end up with the paper?
No.
Okay. Because I was going through my things and I couldn't find that paper. I'm going, did I misplace it? So.
Yeah. Okay.
And I.
Let me see if I can dig up that name. But anyway, yeah, he's still active in there. I think Will Jones knows. Of course, Will is over here. And I'll come on.
Okay. Thanks.
So I'll check on that. I'm going to check on Ray. I'm going to check on where we got the AIW.
And I'm going to check on some Lyra guys to see who else would know stuff about coordinated bargaining.
Yeah.
I thought at the session we did, which I'm still very pleased. I think it went very well. And, well, you don't know yet, but what I put in the mail to you is the CD of your interview with Les.
Oh, really?
I think I mentioned to you in the audience was Lisa Fine.
Right, yeah, cool.
And before it started, I told her, and she was most surprised, because I hadn't thought of this early enough, and I should have, but I hadn't, involving you and doing you on the phone. So it got advertised as just me giving this talk.
Yeah.
And so when I chatted, she got there a little early, and I went back to say hi, and how are you doing, and stuff. And I immediately said, by the way, you're going to see Ken here. And she was like, really? I said, yes. I got him hooked up. He's going to be part of this presentation. And she said, that's pretty neat. And I said, it is. And I said, he and I have continued trying to work. We haven't published anything yet, but we're still doing some research around AIW history. And I said, one of the gaps that still kind of frustrates me is Ken's interview of Les. which you so compliment in your book. And during the session, I two or three times kind of went out of my way to compliment her about that. And so anyways, she had said something like, I'll look for it. I meant to get it to the voice library. So within a couple weeks after that session, she took something to the voice library and they made me a couple copies and I put one in the mail to you. So I haven't listened to it yet, but I was just very pleased that she did follow through. So I look forward to listening to that myself. But at that session, there was a former PhD student of Lisa's who I had had in labor ed classes years before in Flint. A guy named Tom Adams, who did a whole study about Buick City, which was one of the Flint major GM facilities.
Sure.
And at one time was like, you know, incredibly large, you know, whatever, 15,000 members, some incredible number. And I used to do labor ed programs for him. And That local had a guy named David Yetaw, who became kind of a leader of an internal UAW dissident group, putting that in quotes, called New Directions. And at one time I was going to try to do a comparison of why did Yetaw and this Flint local get so kind of opposed to any of the joint labor management initiatives. Well, meanwhile, here in Lansing, one of our big, the Oldsmobile local union leader, Gary Watson, was very favorable to it. And to me, it was fascinating because I was doing labor ed classes for leadership in both unions. And I got intrigued about why is the difference, and I gave some talks about it and stuff. Yetaw died very young and before I could interview him, but this guy Tom Adams did do a number of interviews with Yetaw and with some of his other leadership folks, because they took over this Buick local for a few years. And the region was all upset at him, the international was all upset, because, you know, similar to Michael Moore, they felt that some of the attacks were really ridiculous. And either, you know, overly idealistic or whatever, you know, different critiques. Anyways, it was all very fascinating. Anyways, Tom did get his PhD under Lisa, wrote a dissertation about Buick City, including the story, in more modern times, including the story of the New Directions movement in Yetaw. And now he's working on moving that into being a book. And Tom was one of the people in the audience who asked the, I thought, very perceptive question, which I felt frustrated not being able to answer, which was, what proof do you have, John, and to you too, I guess, but he knows me, what proof do you have that the AIW contracts or servicing or anything were as good as the UAWs or other unions in similar situation, which kind of led to the thing about, well, what did Ray and others try to do, what you were just talking about a minute ago. So in the visuals I had put up some contract stuff, which I have, you know, I have a lot of motor wheel stuff, bits and pieces otherwise, but if you look at those, I was trying to say, you look at these, there's some innovative things. You had pretty early on, you weren't discriminating in terms of separate women's lines for classification, pay and stuff. Pretty early on, doing some things in terms of African Americans. So what would be nice, and I need this, this has been the sort of side issue to me, but I think it's of interest, and Tom's questions were very good on this, I thought. Sort of what proof is there that the AIW was as good or similar on those kind of issues?
Well, yeah, and I'm not, I mean, I think the only way to do that empirically, in other words, for
right.
I mean, in other words, I can tell you what we did.
Right.
I can't tell you whether our contracts, for instance, the hourly wage of similar jobs in similar locations and so forth, were identical, better, worse. You know, I honestly don't know that.
And I don't know it either, but I have a feeling there might be, and you've said this many times, and I agree with you, there may be some grad students in labor relations someplace who would be interested in looking into comparing within, for example, the auto supply sector, different unions, and what did people achieve. Because as I said to Tom at the time, it's not fair to compare AIW at Checkers Motors or Motor Wheel with General Motors at Oldsmobile or Buick. Because even within the UAW, they didn't get the same wages and benefits and everything for their people in a modern day Johnson Control example,
yeah.
Clark Equipment, etc., was not a competitor of GM. It was a competitor of Bud Wheel or something. So you got to compare apples and apples. But
well, right. I mean, the auto parts industry did not get the similar benefits to the big three. There's no question about that. And does that make the unions that represented auto parts, which included UAW-CIO, as well as us, machinists, and so on and so forth, steel workers? I mean, you know, that's why those coordinated bargaining.
Exactly.
For Clark Equipment, for Kelsey Hayes, for all of those were, you know, they have half a dozen unions or more involved.
So my question to you, and I understand you're busy, and I'm not, I just told you I'm doing this paper on an MSU grievance thing, and actually I'm giving a paper, I'm doing a follow-up on right to work in D.C. in 4 weeks, and in Indiana, and I'm also working on another labor ed project. So I got a couple. I'm not going to get back to this other than talking to you or interviewing some other people till the summer.
Yeah.
But if you could think of who would be besides Ray, and I think either you or I or both of us should have a phone call with Ray or figure out when and how I go meet with him. But who else would be sources for trying to put more meat on the question about AIW innovations, either just what they did themselves and or the question of comparatives?
Well, yeah, we've also got Milan Racing.
Okay.
Milan's in Milwaukee, and he was our occupational safety health director.
Okay, and health and safety is one of the ones I think we should talk about.
Well, right, and I can talk to Milan, and I mean, he's over 80 now, and I think he's still got his wits. He calls me every so often. He's kind of a crazy guy.
Well, you could bring up that this crazy professor in Michigan would be love to chat with him over the phone, if nothing else.
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, you could prepare me, or we could do a three-way call or something.
Sure.
But health and safety to me was, and of course, it's personal because that's how I met you and some of the other AIW people. Was
sure.
McDonald moved from MSU to AIW in Milwaukee, and then you guys were very active with the School for Workers and training labor educators to train union leaders on health and safety.
Well, sure. In fact, you know, we should get people like John Lund, who was out of John was big, and so
Neil DeClercq was the one I did a lot with, and
Neil's still there.
He's still there, okay.
Yeah.
So, anyways, health and safety is one. I mean, when I think about Ray and I think about Jeff, it was very depressing, but it was important activity, was dealing with plant closures and pension protection.
Yeah.
I mean, not a happy story, but an important story.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me you guys had to face that in a lot of places.
Listen, I'll go ahead and contact Ray in Milan, and I will put a little work into it.
I understand we both have lots of other things, so I don't want to be ridiculous about it, but I have one more of these topics on my list, and I civil rights, AIW activity in terms of trying to forward civil rights questions or non-discrimination?
Well, we pushed that. I'm not sure that we were really successful. We did a lot of educating in it, you know, in our work at our schools and so on and so forth.
You did sessions on it, I know, because I even have some old flyers about topics related to AIW and civil rights classes.
No, I mean, we were certainly, you know, among those working on it. I mean, for instance, we had the 1939, Frank Evans became board member, Negro board member at large. That was the actual title.
So that gentleman must, of course, have died by now.
Oh, yeah, Frank is long dead, yeah.
But is there anybody? There was a gentleman from Detroit area.
Well, that was Freddie Norris.
Thank you. Fred Norris, who I had been introduced to years ago. Was he still around, or?
Yeah, he's in Monroe, I believe. And Freddie's around. I'm not sure if he's been retired yet or not.
Would it be worthwhile I try to contact him to interview him?
Oh, yeah, and I believe Charlie Street is deceased. Charlie goes way back to the Negro American Labor Council.
Charles Street. I remember meeting Fred Norris at some AIW. I don't remember Charles Street, though the name's familiar.
Well, we had this, I mean, one of the things we did have all the way through was this board member at large seat. And the board member at large seat that we had was originally called, as I said, in 1939, Negro board member at large.
Mm-hmm.
The Negro part of it was dropped. And Frank held on to that position well in, I think 1871 or so.
Where did he come from?
From Cleveland.
Okay.
And Frank was a tall, good-looking guy. Thank God he charmed the feet of everybody. You know, he was just one of those great guys. In that respect, I'm not sure how effective he was as a labor leader, but he was a charmer. And then when he retired, well, long before that, they, of course, dropped the word Negro. That was dropped, you know, somewhere in there, I'm not sure, and probably in the 40s sometime. And then it was just implied that position always would be held by a minority. And Charlie Street succeeded. Charlie was from Youngstown. Charlie succeeded Frank, as I recall. I have to go back and look at that for sure. And then that position stayed that way. And then the question came in was, who constitutes a minority?
Uh-huh.
And then I think after Charlie, we went into an Hispanic guy by the name of Andy Larry, he constituted our minority member, and then we got into, well, then Mary Gilday from Fort Wayne says, well, what's wrong with the woman? We are minority.
Uh-huh.
So Mary became board member at large, and then Freddie Norris. So, and we got back to a black man. So,
gotcha.
So it was kind of, these were always hot political potatoes at our conventions as to who was going to be the board member at large. Of course, we couldn't say it was reserved for for a minority person, but that was pretty much the tradition.
It became a big issue in the UAW CIO. It's somewhat been written up in terms of the debate about that, so.
Sure. I mean, and you go back into all of that stuff. I mean, we did teach it. I mean, there was no question. We had resolutions all the time and stuff like that. And, so, I mean, I don't think we were backward in it at all. How much of a pioneer we were.
Right.
I'm not sure. I mean, in some areas, we had an uphill battle. I remember vividly, I was new on the staff. I mean, I told you this story. I was hired in February of 1968, and on April 6th, Martin Luther King was shot. I was working on a collective bargaining conference we had in Decatur, Illinois. That morning, back to, we were going to have classes. Went down to the hotel dining room for breakfast, the old Orlando, and Red Gentry, as they came by, and I had the Decatur paper over. Big headline was Dr. Payton killed. And he said something, I forget the phrase, I've got it written down somewhere, but like, well, it's about time or good riddance, really a nasty comment. And I was brand new on the staff, and of course I have to come to challenge him because he was old timers, which I shape. But that was the attitude we had in a lot of places. Red was from Fort Wayne, and there were a lot of rednecks there, and in the Cleveland area, from Longville, there's a strong George Wallace, group there. And Central Illinois, of course. We had a lot of rednecks we had to deal with, and I don't like to use the term redneck, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I do. In Michigan, in more recent times...
And Michigan was terrible. I mean, there's no question about it there. Yeah.
Wallace did... I think I put that in an email to you recently. Wallace did very well in Michigan.
I recall that, yeah.
So, the... support that Trump has gotten from white males who I think formerly would have been influenced by unions, but they're no longer union oriented.
Right.
I think are very easily interested in Trump's pledges to build some kind of walls around America. To protect us from both China and Mexico. Which reminds me, there was an article in just the Sunday New York Times. Steve Greenhouse, who used to be the Times labor editor or labor writer, and he retired, but he's still writing. He did an article called "Can Labor Still Turn Out the Vote?" I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
And, my sense is the answer is no. And it has an impact because I think with, you know, in Michigan, it's part of the explanation for right to work.
Yeah.
Part of the explanation for Trump's support, as well as Bernie Sanders' support among these white males. So it's an interesting situation.
Sure.
So
So anyway, where are we then?
So I got two other little things and we can just close up. One was, okay. I have a few, for the last few years that I've been a member of Wisconsin Labor History Society, a few newsletters. Are there old newsletters that you guys did that did have stuff about AIW?
There was one that I did a few years ago, and I could send you that.
Please do.
But there wasn't anything that I know of. That would fit that thing.
Okay.
So, what I will do, I wrote it up just because I needed two pages to fill one day.
Sure, I understand. So my other question, or I forgot to mention it earlier, the voice library here makes a big deal about getting these release forms, and I keep bugging you about sign a release form and send it to me.
Have I got it?
Well, I think I attached it a couple times, and I put a new copy along with the CD that I mailed to you, maybe you should Xerox several times before you sign one.
Okay.
I put in a little yellow note, and I have no idea if there's any possibility. Is there any Washburn kid, grandkid, other relative who can agree that MSU could post this interview you did with Washburn? That we could
his son, I believe it's his son or daughter, I forget which, lives in Oconawa. Now that's been a while since I talked to them. It's been 20 years, so I don't know if they're still around. Because their son would probably be my age or a little younger.
Well, MSU would like not just your signature, but Les's decedent signature on the release form. And I can follow up, they can follow up, or you can follow up, but I have no knowledge, but just what I ask you, I assumed you might.
Yes, I'm going to have to search my files.
I'm sorry, I'm giving you lots of jobs, so there's no rush on any of them.
Okay, well, I will work on, I'll see if I can find Les's camp, if they're still around. As I say, they were very cooperative back when, I don't know when the hell I last talked to them. God, come to think of it, it's got to be 20 years ago.
His cabin wasn't near yours, right?
No. Les used to go to Tomahawk.
Uh-huh.
We drive through Tomahawk on our way to our cabin, and we've got another, after Tomahawk, we got another 2 hours, almost 2 hours.
Okay.
To our cabin, so it's a... But anyway, his son lives in Oconomowoc, which is just west of Milwaukee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Years ago...
I think it's his daughter and son. Yeah.
Long before you and I started talking about any of this, I was trying to catch up with Les in relationship to the Lansing Labor Holiday.
Yeah.
Which had been written up in our local papers plus an academic article by an MSU prof, and Bob Repas or Fred Haler, one of those two labor educators, knew Les or had interactions, and so I traded you know, this was kind of maybe pre-internet or different level of computer connection to try to catch up to him, and it failed in the end. But I do recall that people would say, you know, you need to catch him when he's up at the cottage, but you can't connect then, but through the mail, you know, it's all kind of silly, but...
Yeah. Well, it was hard because he really wanted to get away.
Yeah.
And he actually ran a resort up there.
I thought that's right. I think either, either Fred Haler or Bob Ripas or, another guy who worked here at MSU and U of M all were buddies with him.
Yeah, probably were, because he was a fun guy to be with.
Uh-huh.
And very personal.
So, Russ Allen.
Yes, yeah, right.
That's the other guy I got to know who worked either here or U of M or both years ago. And then he may have also, like Haler and Jackie Brophy, gone to the Meany Center.
Right, exactly right. That's right. They all went to the Meany Center.
Yeah. And including Jeff McDonald. That's where he went before he went to the Pilots. And anyways... Some of those folks tried to help me get in touch with Les, and it never happened, so.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Okay, sounds good, and hope you stay off the bike for a while.
Yeah, I hit some, Diane thinks it was a pothole and a piece of the asphalt or something split off, and I was on my side and butt and back to taking pain meds for my ribs.
Well, I used to ride the bike all the time until about 6-7 years ago. I was riding along the forest lane near our cabin, because we're located right in the National Forest. And I was going down a hill on this forest road, and at the very bottom, the sand had washed down, and I was going real fast. I hit that heavy bit of sand, and of course, the bike stopped.
But you didn't.
And I didn't, and I ended up over into a thicket of bushes, which broke my fall, thank God. But I really threw my shoulder out, and so my wife has said, "No way, no way." Well, I still ride on the highway up there. But
do you?
Yeah.
You were.
But I stay off the back roads. You know.
Were you in your 70s when that accident happened?
Yeah, just about 80. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What? No, I don't ride. Actually, I do not ride anymore.
Uh huh.
I did for a few years after.
Well, I'm still riding, but I have...
I'm a little shaky now, and I'm afraid when sometimes those logging trucks go by, and, that gets scary. So.
You take care.
Well, okay, you take care, and be good. Bye-bye.
Take care, bye.